Well, hello and welcome to today's episode of Breaking the Taboo. And I'm delighted to be joined by two special guests today to talk about health inequalities in maternity care and their experiences of birth trauma. And my two guests today are Sandra Igwe, who is a maternal health advocate, author and founder of the Motherhood Group, which is a social enterprise supporting Black mothers through culturally safe peer support, events and community engagement. She's also the creator of the Black Mums app, a femtech innovation designed to connect and empower Black mothers through AI-powered community tools. She also leads the popular annual Black Maternal Health Conference in the UK, founded the Black Maternal Mental Health Week, and regularly works with the NHS and government bodies to try and drive policy and practice change in maternal care. And I'm also delighted to be joined today by Neha Joshi, who is mum to a 5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. And in May 2020, after the birth of her son by an emergency C-section, she had a very difficult experience on her postnatal ward. And at the time, it was during the pandemic with restrictions due to COVID. The experience left her with PTSD and finding it difficult to adjust to life as a new mum. She's become passionate about raising awareness of birth and postnatal ward trauma and to share her experience to help others to feel less alone. She's also a volunteer as a peer supporter for the Birth Trauma Association. Well, firstly, can I thank you both so much for coming on today's episode? I think it's so helpful to hear directly from both of you who've got personal experience of birth trauma, but also to talk about health inequalities in the UK. So I'm delighted that you've joined us today. And perhaps, Sandra, if I could start with you. The reason I wanted to do today's episode was because in the Birth Trauma Inquiry Report in Parliament, we had an entire chapter where we focused on marginalised groups and asked the government to look at tackling health inequalities. And we know that 28% of babies are born to non-white ethnic minority groups. So this is a significant proportion of the UK population. But there is not a standardised level of care being received and very different maternal health outcomes. So could you just introduce us first to the topic about racial disparities in maternal health? And perhaps you could also share a bit about your personal experience and how you first learnt about this.
Thank you so much, Theo Clark. I really appreciate being here. And absolutely, you can't talk about, maternal health without talking about race. You know, the disparities, you know, aren't accidental. They are as a result of, you know, racism built into healthcare systems. And Black women are more likely to be dismissed. And we're more likely to be misdiagnosed. We're more likely to be harmed when seeking care. And this isn't just about, you know, individual biases. It's about structural bias. It's about history. It's about, you know, the lack of protection. And we know that Black mothers are more likely to have perinatal mental health challenges, emergency C-sections. Our babies are more likely to have, you know, neonatal deaths. We're more likely to have miscarriages, emergency C-sections, and the list literally goes on. That's why I created the Motherhood Group after the birth of my first daughter, when I was dismissed and I raised concerns, when I was sent home 5 times, when her heart rate dropped because nobody, looked into, you know, my pleas and my cries for help. And also, even when I raised concerns after my daughter was born and they were also, my child was also ignored as a baby, they failed to make a note, her significant drop in weight, which went on to for her to have a condition, and she was really poorly and really sick, and that could have and would have been prevented if they had just took my concerns seriously. And my story isn't a standalone story, it's a standalone experience. This happens every single day to so many, you know, Black and brown women. And, we need to treat racism as a public health crisis. And we will, you know, keep seeing preventable deaths, poorer outcomes, inadequate treatment if we just ignore it and, you know, brush it under the carpet. And that's why, you know, I'm using my voice, my story, my organisation, digital platforms, and also my book to make sure that change actually happens.
Well, this is such a difficult topic to talk about, Sandra. So firstly, thank you for coming on the show. And, you know, racism is not a subject that we've spoken about on our previous series of Breaking the Taboo. But it was very striking to me when reading the many submissions in Parliament to the Birth Trauma Inquiry that women were being treated differently, particularly those from ethnic backgrounds. So can I just ask on this point about racial disparities, what do you think that the NHS could do to improve care to make sure that we do have better outcomes for Black and Asian mums?
Definitely, it needs to be a national movement, and the NHS could absolutely include anti-racism training as a mandatory, immediate action, making sure that professionals who engage directly with Black mothers and our babies are trained so that we don't always have to advocate for ourselves to preserve our lives. You know, understanding what good language and communication looks like in a healthcare setting, how to spot the signs in darker skin tones, you know, and making sure that Black women feel safe enough in these spaces to voice our concerns without being gaslit to believe that we're over-exaggerating our pain, which is what I was told, that I'm exaggerating, my pain. So definitely anti-racism training, but also, as I mentioned, safe spaces, you know, making sure that Black women feel empowered to come together, to speak about the challenges, to raise concerns. Many mothers that I know have and are currently suffering in silence because of the fear and the stigma of, you know, of getting social services involved or being seen as less than or just not being listened to. So that's an off-putting for them as well. So making sure that spaces and services are safe enough so that there is a space to speak up and speak out about the challenges.
And I think this is so important because for anyone listening to today's show who's not aware of the very important Embrace report, which looks at these statistics, we are talking about some really scary statistics. I mean, you know, women who are from a Black background are at the time 5 times more likely to die in childbirth. And we know that the statistics for Asian women are also much higher than for white women. So I do think the government has a responsibility to take this seriously and to be talking about addressing it. And Nea, if I could bring you in, you had, a very difficult time in hospital. And I wondered if we could just start there by you briefly sharing your story and how it was that you first came to start talking about your birth and support for mums afterwards.
Yeah, so my labour was induced because my waters broke and contractions didn't start. And for the first 24 hours of that, I was on my own because of hospital visiting restrictions during COVID. And then I got moved down to the labour ward where my husband was allowed to join me, got hooked up to the hormone drip. But unfortunately, after about 10 hours on the drip, I was still only a few centimetres dilated. So I got taken for an emergency C-section because my baby's heart rate kept dropping. Soon after he was born, my husband was sent home. And that was the point at which I realised that I would now be on my own until I was allowed to leave hospital because I had a strict, like, no visitors policy on the postnatal ward. And so I was just taken up there, shoved into a bay. There seemed to be absolutely no acknowledgement from any staff that, you know, I just had major abdominal surgery and was completely immobile. Obviously, you know, I was numb from the waist down. My baby was just crying in his cot and I couldn't reach over to him. So I pressed the buzzer to ask for help, and a healthcare assistant came in, asked me how old I was, smirked at me and just walked away and said I had to figure it out on my own. And it was just horrendous. It was absolutely horrific just hearing your baby cry and knowing that you can't go to them and no one is helping you to comfort them. I was begging like multiple times just for a glass of water, and then, you know, nighttime came and all the other mums left. So I was completely alone in this dark room with a crying baby that I couldn't soothe, who wasn't really breastfeeding. And when I flagged that he wasn't feeding, they brought some formula over instead of helping me, like supporting me to feed him. And he was massively overfed. So he was given, you know, like the 60ml pre-made bottle. And the midwife said that he'd guzzled it all down. So she went to get another one, which he had most of it as well. And the whole night he was just, he looked like he was choking in his cot, just gagging and spitting up milk. Obviously the pain in my stitches was agonizing, and I could not keep going to like keep getting up to check on him. And I was horrified to later find out that at not even a day old, a baby only needs about 10 mils of milk per feed. So he was, yeah, really just massively overfed and in so much distress. Yeah, it was just awful. The whole night just felt so slow. But I just had to, you know, survive somehow, because I had to get through it, because I didn't have a choice.
Well, firstly, I'm so sorry to hear about your experience. And what really strikes me listening to both of you is that you were both mothers who'd had a difficult time and you weren't listened to by hospital staff. And I think that's the point I really want to get across, is that we do need to listen to mums. And that's why I called my report in Parliament that title, because actually you will know best when something's wrong with your own bodies or also with your newborn babies. So Sandra, why is it, do you think, that we tend not to listen to Black and Asian mums? Because quite frankly, that's outrageous. And that's why I've been campaigning on the government to do something about it. But why do you think that's the case?
I believe that listening should be so easy to do, but sadly it's not done enough. And I think it's because of the misconceptions and the preconceptions that are out there, that many, you know, service providers have towards Black women, brown women. And if, for example, you know, after the birth of my first daughter, when I had that traumatic experience, and then I was asked about what I did for work. And then I, you know, told the midwife, and her body language changed. She put me then into a nice private room, offered me tea and coffee several times and toast. And her, you know, her mannerisms started to be a lot more pleasant. She was listening to me then, and she noticed that actually, you know, that wasn't, you know, my boyfriend, he was my husband. And I think because of the preconceptions that she had about me, sadly, made her not want to, or I guess reluctant to, listen to me and be proactive and have that sort of caring nature about the way she interacted with me. And that's really harmful, because I believe everybody, regardless of your, you know, your background, your socioeconomical background, your race, your age, your status, whether you're married or unmarried, a single mother, everybody should be entitled to have their basic human rights met, the, you know, the right to equality, choice, dignity, and for their choices, for, you know, for our choices to be heard. And that's why, you know, taking part in the inquiry into racial injustice, I co-chaired that through the Birthrights charity. Simple things like listening to Black mothers, you know Black mothers reporting that we felt like we were the least likely to be on the receiving end of kindness. And it is so simple, but yet that you could see that theme reoccurring throughout the entire, you know, inquiry. And that's because of these harmful stereotypes, which are essentially microaggressions. And that's why we're not seeing, you know, Black women being listened to, definitely not being listened to in a timely manner. And this, it's definitely a racial issue, because we've also heard Black women who are, you know, middle class, exceptionally rich, experiencing the same thing as well, because they're first met as a Black woman first and foremost, and that's why they're more likely to be dismissed, misdiagnosed as well, and also harmed when seeking care.
And you're making such an important point. And I think also the other thing we don't really discuss enough with different ethnicity and groups is about risks in childbirth. And I was just looking up some statistics for today's show, and just a couple that I came across was that Black women are much more likely to suffer from preeclampsia, and that Asian women are much higher rates of gestational diabetes. So actually we do need to be listening to these mums, because their risks and likelihood of developing many of these complications are higher. So when something goes wrong, it's even more important that they are being listened to. And what strikes me listening to both of you is there was also just a complete lack of support, it sounds like, in the first few months and weeks after birth. And you had such a difficult time, particularly because your birth was during the pandemic. And I thought you wrote very movingly about that experience and having a lockdown baby in my book, Breaking the Taboo. And thank you for writing your story down. Could I just talk about this support afterwards? Because also you're very confident and good advocates for yourselves, but I think a lot of mums listening to the show might not be as confident and feel like they can't speak up for themselves. And there's also a bit of a taboo and a stigma, let's be honest, about raising many of the things that can go wrong during birth, particularly on things like mental health and birth injuries. So Naya, what happened to you after birth, and what support were you offered?
So on day five, I had a health visitor come over to the house, and she just asked how the birth was, you know, and I mentioned about what had happened on the postnatal ward and that I was very upset about it. And she was sympathetic. She was listening and she encouraged me to make a complaint to the hospital. And that was about it, to be honest. And then my next interaction was with a GP. So that was at my 6-week check at the doctor's surgery. And, you know, I mentioned that I was feeling just really down and irritable and I just wasn't feeling like myself. And she asked me to come back in 2 weeks, I assume with a view of starting, you know, antidepressants or at least considering them. And, you know, I had mentioned about the treatment on the postnatal ward and that I was, you know, really quite upset about it. And that was that, really. And then it was a few months later. So it was about when my son was about maybe 3 months old, I spoke to a private GP because my husband had private health cover through work. And I realised at that point that there was definitely something wrong with me. I mean, I didn't know what. I just knew that I just wasn't myself. I was explaining to her what happened at the hospital, but I kept breaking down crying. So I couldn't actually talk about it coherently enough for her to understand. And she just said, you know, I'm going to refer you for some psychological support because you're obviously like very upset about what's happened, and it just sounds like you could have a bit of postnatal depression that should clear up with the right help. And so I reached out to a psychologist that I found online through Bupa's directory, and I had a couple of sessions with this lady. She seemed to be talking about like parenting styles and kind of just completely missing the point about how much I was struggling from what had happened to me. So I stopped those sessions, and, you know, that was the fourth medical professional that didn't pick up that I had signs of PTSD. And eventually I found out about the Birth Trauma Association. So I looked on their website and they had like a list of therapists that, you know, specialize in that area. So that's when I eventually found my psychologist. He was absolutely amazing and, you know, diagnosed the PTSD in the first session. But it's just scary to think that, you know, there was 3 or 4 chances to pick that up and it wasn't picked up. So if I hadn't, you know, if I hadn't gone private, then I don't know, like what would have happened, whether that would ever have been picked up, and I would kind of just carry on in this cycle of feeling awful and just constantly reliving the fear and the horror of the postnatal ward and not getting the right help for it.
And what's interesting listening to your story now is that you did ask multiple times for help, but a lot of mums will only ask once or not at all.
When I needed help after my birth trauma, Erwin Mitchell's team of experts provided the support I needed to rebuild my life.
At Erwin Mitchell, we work closely with our clients through any challenges. We understand the impact of a birth injury and can help get the best medical support and rehabilitation for our clients and their families. Authorised and regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority.
And Sandra, I was interested to hear at the beginning of the episode, you mentioned about the kind of the shame and the barriers that a lot of mums feel, that they get very concerned about their children being taken into care, particularly if they're going to raise mental health issues. And I have heard that on other episodes from other guests. So could you just talk a bit about that? Like, why is it, do you think, that we do have this sort of fear and taboo about speaking about mental health post-birth, and what advice would you like to offer anyone listening to the show who's thinking about asking for help but doesn't know what to do?
I definitely think that society, both within the community, both outside of the community, has kind of silenced or shamed or stereotyped, you know, mothers in general, but especially those from ethnic minority backgrounds, into not speaking about, you know, maternal mental health and the impact that birth trauma, racism, unfair and unkind treatment has on you after giving birth. And, you know, that's something that I've heard countless amount of times, that Black women, you know, feel very much alone in motherhood and don't feel visible, don't feel seen, you know, when you're raising your concerns and they're being dismissed, ignored. When you then, you know, want to go and see a practitioner, they're almost penalizing you, you know, checking if your baby is okay and making out like you're the criminal. I've heard this because of the work that I've done through, you know, research and through the motherhood group, through the book that I wrote, you know, My Black Motherhood, Mental Health, Racism and the Stigma and the System, that I spoke about my own personal lived experience of after giving birth to my first daughter. And immediately being asked, being given a letter for social services when I've had no other in my entire life interaction with social services. And that was falsely made by a community midwife who stereotyped me and my husband. They put her on training and she wrote a letter of apology, but that wasn't good enough because that left me feeling as though I was inherently just bad as a Black woman. And, you know, when there are, you know, safe spaces for mothers, they're very much whitewashed. They don't necessarily tailor towards Black women. And I remember going with my baby to all of these baby groups, stay and play sessions, and not seeing any women that looked like me or understood my culture as a Black British woman. That's why I set up the motherhood group. And that's why now we have our digital safe space, the Black Mums app by the motherhood group, where it uses AI to actually connect Black mothers with each other based on lived experience as well as geographical area, because I desperately needed to speak to another mother who had gone through something similar. And I just couldn't find that. And that further kind of kept me in isolation, which of course makes or symptoms of anxiety you know, makes it a lot more. And that's why I'm proud of my book now being part of the Reading Well library scheme, which essentially puts this resource in every library across the country, making it free and accessible to all people, especially those that might need it the most.
Yeah, and I saw that, and well done for getting it added in, because actually getting these statistics and stories put into more of like the national curriculum that healthcare professionals would be reading, but also being recommended to the general public, I think so important to change the conversation. And just listening to you both, I think it's so clear that there is a real lack of support for mums postnatally. And that's why I've been campaigning so hard for the last few years to end that maternity postcode lottery in care. But also, I do think a lot of mums don't feel like they can ask for help. And now I'm interested in sort of your Asian community. Presumably it was seen as quite a taboo subject, really, to talk about maternal mental health. And did you have sort of pushback from friends or family saying, you know, why are you raising this? Why do you need to be talking about PTSD? And I think a lot of mums say to me that they don't like to use that term because it's so associated with the military. But actually, we need to move away from that. It's not just veterans that can develop PTSD, but any mum who's had a really severe experience of birth trauma is also at risk of developing those symptoms, and they need to have help. So why do you think it is that it's still a bit of a taboo subject with Asian culture?
Yeah, I think anything sort of the general perception of mental health issues in Asian culture is that it's just something that is in your head and you can kind of snap out of it. And I think that's just how generations have been brought up. So it's kind of just filtered down. But obviously, that's not the case. And, you know, it's PTSD just doesn't work like that. It's not something that you can just forget about, which is something I really struggled with. You know, when people just be like, oh, but you're home now and you're not in hospital anymore. It was just one night in hospital. It's fine. But you know, it really wasn't fine. And I think these perceptions really need to be challenged, because there will be some people that will feel silenced by it and feel like, you know, actually, I can't talk to people in my family, or I can't talk to friends, because, you know, I should just get on with it and I should be okay despite whatever I've gone through. I think, yeah, there's a lot of kind of shame around, you know, admitting that you are struggling with your mental health, whether that's postnatally or not, just in general in Asian culture. And I think, you know, people fear being judged if they, you know, come out openly to talk about it, which is why I think it is really important to keep talking about it, because if you don't, then it kind of just gets brushed under the rug and the cycle kind of just carries on.
Well, that's so true. And that's exactly why I set up this podcast, to be breaking the taboo by speaking about it. And for anyone who's listening to today's show and is looking for help with their mental health post-birth, do check out series one. We have a very specialist episode on this. We in fact have a psychiatrist who comes on the show and talks about the different types of mental health support and what's out there. But I always like to ask guests on the show if there was anything particular that they found helpful, because I really want this resource on the podcast to be as practical as possible. So Neera, is there anything that you did to help you with recovery from PTSD that you'd like to share?
So I started writing poems after my son was born, which were about sort of my time on the postnatal ward and the immediate months after his birth. And it was actually really cathartic and quite healing. It definitely really helped. But also, I would just recommend, you know, getting the right therapy. I think it's so important. I still vividly remember the first session I had with my psychologist, you know, and I was telling her that I was literally almost walking at right angles to the floor, just carrying my baby because I was in so much pain. And yet staff were walking up and down the corridor and, you know, just they were just walking past me as if I was completely fine. And she said, "What you endured was brutalizing." And that just stuck with me because it was the first time I felt like I didn't need to dismiss the reality of what I went through, because someone understood and I actually felt heard. And that in itself was just so healing. It was kind of just a start to getting better. You know, I didn't have EMDR or trauma-focused CBT to treat my PTSD. My therapist actually did something called the rewind technique, which is... it's like a method of hypnosis, which kind of helps you to reprocess and neutralize the traumatic memory. And it was so, so quick. It only took about 25 minutes. I didn't have to talk about what had happened. And pretty much after that, I was able to think about what happened without feeling extremely distressed by it. And yeah, it was just life changing, just being able to think about it and just think, oh, that was a really bad time in life, but I'm okay now.
Well, it's interesting to hear that both creativity and mental health specialist support really helped you with recovery. And I should say to any listeners out there, I did different things to Neera, but very similar. You know, writing my book down and my story, Breaking the Taboo, was not intended to be a form of therapy, but it certainly helped kind of download those memories and help me to process them. And I did do the eye desensitization movement technique, which really helped me to process some of my memories. And Sanjay, I know that you had a similar experience of developing PTSD post-birth, and I don't think your postnatal depression was picked up at the time. And what were the kind of symptoms that you were displaying, and what help did you get in the end?
Yeah, so it's quite interesting, because what I've, experienced is very similar to what many other Black women experience when they're going through either PTSD or depression or anxiety post-birth. We kind of have more somatic symptoms. So we might say, you know, my back aches, you know, my legs ache, I'm not sleeping very well, I'm sleeping too much. We won't really, very rarely use the word, you know, I feel depressed or I'm feeling anxious. But you just notice that. For me, I didn't want to go outside. I wanted to stay indoors. I didn't want to put on the TV. I wanted the blinds closed. I wanted everywhere really, really dark and jet black. I was frantically cleaning. My house was spotless. And these were some of my symptoms, which is why I didn't really necessarily know that I had postnatal depression until my sister said, "I think you might have that," because of my crying uncontrollably. Especially being quite a funny and bubbly person. And for me, you know, going to professional services was very much out of the question based on the experience that I had giving birth. I just thought, they don't have my best interests at heart. I'm not going to the very people that caused me this harm in the first place. And so I found it very therapeutic speaking to other Black women. That was my cure. And setting up a WhatsApp group called the Motherhood Group, and speaking to other Black women who, you know, were struggling as well. And, you know, that really helped me sort of overcome that level of shame and embarrassment. Finding a church for me, and actually going out and joining the choir and being around other faith-based faith-based believers really helped me on my walk, helped me conceptualize, you know, what I'm going through might be temporary. And then also writing poetry and writing, but, you know, starting my Black Motherhood book definitely helped me to process, you know, what I had gone through. I was able to kind of cry from a place of healing. And that was definitely my journey to feeling like myself again. And that's probably what I would encourage mothers to do, what's best for you. If it is speaking to a practitioner, then do that. If it's speaking to your community and taking more of a holistic approach, I'd say do that as well. But the option should be there.
And I related to so much of what you just said, Sandra, particularly on the perinatal OCD and not wanting to leave the house. I mean, I wrote a whole chapter about that because it was, as you said, so out of character to my usual behaviour. And I think that's a really important point for anyone listening to today's episode, that if either you or a friend or family member is behaving out of sorts and not their usual character, that is normally a very good indication that they might need help. So the example I can give you is I got so obsessed about cleaning the house, similar to you, Sandra. I remember I was literally picking up like individual crumbs from behind the toaster, which is kind of ridiculous now I think about it. But I got so agitated and really quite distressed by even, you know, like tea towels not being folded in a pile. And I think from what I've learned from sort of therapy myself is that it's that a chance to kind of control our environments, because we were all in situations where we did have a very difficult birth or aftermath, and we were completely in a situation where we had no control over what happened to us. So I think trying to kind of put those boundaries onto our environment is a very typical thing that women who've had birth trauma experience. And it strikes me as well that you both reached out to different groups to find a community and a network of other mums who'd had a similar experience. And I think that's so important to connect with other mums. And Naya mentioned the Birth Trauma Association. They were the first group that I reached out to, and I met 10 other mums in that original meeting who kind of talked to me about their experiences. So perhaps you could both tell me about how peer support has really helped you. And Nay, I know you're also a peer support walker for the BTA. So what do they do? And for anyone who doesn't know their work, what would you recommend?
Yeah, so the BTA have a phone line and also an email service. So anyone who's struggling, whether it's a person that's given birth or their partner, can reach out via email or phone, and somebody will get back to you, somebody who has lived experience of a traumatic birth themselves, which I think is really, really helpful, because, you know, they can understand what you're going through and sort of signpost to, you know, other areas of help, or just provide a listening ear. Just a compassionate listening ear just makes a lot of difference as well.
I so agree. And I think knowing you're not alone as well, ladies, it's you know, I think when you understand it's not, you're not the only person this has happened to, and that there are other mums you can talk to, it helps you to feel like problem shared is a problem halved. And Sandra, tell us about the motherhood group and why you set it up and what is it that you do?
Yeah, so the motherhood group supports the Black maternal experience, and we do have events and peer supports and campaigns, and we also train healthcare practitioners on understanding really and supporting the Black maternal experience. We get commissioned to undergo and take a part in a community engagement and research. We've worked recently with Meta to put on a large-scale event to speak about the importance of online spaces and connecting mums with each other who have gone through shared experiences. We had Katie Bonfall, who spoke about her miscarriage experience, giving birth to two stillborn babies a year apart, and how she used her page, social media, to really speak about these issues, because she couldn't find anywhere online that finding a Black woman who'd gone through that because of the stigma. And people are in the audience who were crying and they could relate to her experience. And, you know, we really amplified the voices of Black mothers, because for a very long time we have felt like, can we speak about these really traumatic experiences? You know, we've been told to be strong and to put on a brave face, or to keep what's behind closed doors. And actually, the more we normalize the conversation, the more we are allowed to heal and feel empowered. The motherhood group January launched our digital village, the Black Mums app, where you can connect with mums. And we start next week with our free group therapy, that uses our in-house psychotherapist, Daniela, to really facilitate these conversations on a group level. Mums don't have to show their face. They can just use their audio, the function of their phone, to speak to other mums, but also speak to this wonderful psychotherapist who has also got lived experience as well. And it's kind of like finding a way to blend, you know, professional support with community support from the comfort of your home.
And I think it's so helpful to talk to somebody else who's had lived experience. I mean, now remember when I first met the mums in Parliament, bearing in mind I was a sitting politician in you know, the House of Commons in my place of work. And I just remember bursting into tears in the middle of my first meeting with all these other mums very unexpectedly. And I think it just shows, you know, that trauma is still trapped in your body. But when you speak about it and share the experience, that's what allows it to start to come out. And it really helps with your recovery. And a question I always like to ask all of my guests is there a really like practical piece of advice that you would like to signpost families to the show too? So it could be a book that you've read or a podcast that you've listened to or a website or a charity that you've come across. But I want the show to be as practical as possible. So if you've got any recommendations, Naya, let me come to you first.
Yeah, I think I would recommend reading the book Birth Shock by Mia Scotland. So Mia was actually my psychologist and she has written a book about birth trauma. It's got, you know, lots of information about self-help tips and explains how trauma can impact relationships, what happens if it resurfaces, you know, in a subsequent pregnancy. But yeah, it's a really good understanding of, you know, what is happening in your brain when you become traumatized.
That's such a good recommendation. And I should say for anyone listening to today's show, there's lots of hyperlinks in the show notes where you can find links to the charities and resources that we're mentioning. And Sandra, what would you like to signpost listeners to as a resource?
I do think lived experience is data, and it should really, you know, shape decisions and not just decorate reports. And so if you follow any sort of lived experience organizations and charities and movements, especially those that use voice to explain and share stories. So we have, you know, for example, we have a podcast, the Motherhood Group podcast, where we speak to different women and they share their stories, and it's free. It's on YouTube, as well as, you know, Maternal Mental Health Alliance. They have their lived experience champions that go around and share their stories. We have, you know, other groups such as, you know, Black Mothers Matter, Motivational Mums Club, Black Working Mothers. There's so many other, you know, Black-led organisations that are doing wonderful work and putting lived experience at the forefront. And I'm going to always plug my book, My Black Motherhood. Honestly, this is a great resource for not just mothers and parents, but also healthcare practitioners and our allies. And actually, I'd say it's more so for them as well, because we already know what we go through. This book is definitely to comfort us, but it's to also educate and equip practitioners who really want to know, how can I support a Black mother? What are the signs and symptoms? How can I communicate with her more effectively so that she can have the support that she needs?
Those are so helpful, both of those points from both of you. Well, we're already coming towards the end of the episode. So what I'd like to turn now, just to finish us off, is a bit about policy. And when I chaired the Birth Trauma Inquiry in Parliament with Rosie Duffield MP, we wrote a whole chapter on marginalised groups, and we came up with a very specific recommendation to try and tackle sort of racial inequalities in maternity care. And something that we asked was specifically for the government to basically provide information in different languages and to have translation services, and that to be offered on the NHS, because we heard so many stories of mums from, you know, all different walks of life who said that if language and not being able to speak English was a problem, then that barrier during a birth is, you know, 10 times worse than just having a normal meeting and a GP appointment or a standard routine operation. So we made that very particular policy recommendation to the Prime Minister to say that they must roll out forms of NHS training in different languages for different groups to understand and have access to information. So can I ask both of you, imagine that the Prime Minister or the Health Secretary was listening to today's episode. What would be the one thing that you'd like the government to do to improve maternity care and to reduce inequalities in maternal health? Sandra, let me start with you.
I'll keep it simple and short. Train healthcare practitioners, put this in the educational system for medical students. This needs to be taught in schools as early on as possible.
Very good. Nice and short and pithy. And Nea, what would you like the government to do?
Yeah, I would say training healthcare professionals specifically on the importance of compassionate care, both during and immediately after birth, because, yeah, I feel it's not seen as important. Looking after mothers after birth isn't seen as important.
You're so right. And I've heard so many times on different episodes of the podcast how I think we have such a focus in the UK on the pregnant mum and then the newborn baby, that it's almost like we forget that there's another patient in the room post-delivery, and that's the mum, and they need support with their mental and physical health recovery too. Well, can I thank you both so much for coming on today's episode of Breaking the Taboo. Firstly, for really powerfully sharing some of your personal experiences. And I know it is really hard to talk about these things, but I hope for anyone listening today, know that you're not alone. There are many of us who've been through really difficult births and suffered from major complications afterwards, but we have got help. We have connected with others. We've found a community through different charities, and many of them are listed on my website. So do check out our resources page. And if you do know someone who's struggling, do refer them to specialist services, because it's so important that they get help. So if you've enjoyed today's episode of Breaking the Taboo, then do rate us on iTunes or Spotify. Please do share it with friends and family members. We'd love to connect with as many mums as possible to provide support to families that have suffered from similar issues. And we'd also love to hear from you. If you've got an idea for a particular topic or a guest that you'd like us to consider on Breaking the Taboo, then do reach out to us on social media or via my website. Some of our very best episodes have come from mums suggesting topics. And the very first episode that we did in this new series was looking specifically at baby loss. And that came about because so many of you wanted to know more about dealing with the grief after losing a baby. So we do read your comments. We're keen to hear from you. And if I can just thank both of my guests today for coming on and breaking the taboo. So stay tuned and please dial in to next week's episode. Bye-bye for now.